Jim Taylor, former chief financial officer at the Department of Labor, among other positions, and now managing director for the global public sector at Grant Thornton. Jim, thanks for coming on the program today. We hear from Mark Rieger at the Office of Federal Financial Management at OMB that he wants to make some changes to reduce improper payments. One of those is to make the A-123 less prescriptive and to rely on the people on the ground. What does making A-123 less prescriptive mean in your mind, Jim? Thanks for being on.
Oh, my pleasure, Francis. It's A-123 has very carefully defined, you know, the percentages and approaches and the responses that IGs need to make and CFOs need to make on improper payments. For example, there's a certain percentage in which the IG has to be involved, has to review your reporting, and has to declare something as being high risk. I believe that what we're talking about here is instead of saying that, you know, there's a flat percentage of improper payments that makes you high risk, that you need to look at what the program's all about. And if you're talking about fraud, look at the experienced people on the ground who understand what causes the fraud, what are the processes that are in danger, what are the weaknesses and internal controls that you need to look at. I mean, the guidance for A-123, of course, is all about, you know, internal controls and management reporting on those internal controls. So hopefully what he's pointing towards is taking a more risk-based approach and identifying where the best return on investment is, where is the best opportunity for reducing improper payments and eliminating fraud as much as possible.
So that concept of ROI on improper payments is fascinating to me, Jim, because it strikes me that at some point, I know you don't want to come out, and nobody wants to come out and put a number on it, but at some point it becomes cost restrictive, I guess, is the best term I can think of, to go after the last dollar. It costs you more to collect the last dollar of improper payments than you recover. How do you determine what that balance is? And is that maybe what he's getting at about this idea of relying on the people on the ground?
Yeah, I totally agree with what you're saying. And when you're talking about a return on investment, it's what does this going to cost to reduce that improper payment? How much effort does it require? And does it make sense to spend the money, that extra dollar that you have available in resources on that particular activity versus a bunch of other activities that all federal agencies have and can't really perform? And when the problem you run into in the federal government particularly is you can't do purely a return on investment in economic sense because there's the optics side of it. I mean, no one wants to be on the front page of the newspaper with a fraud case. No one wants to talk about Medicare fraud or unemployment insurance fraud or earned income tax credit fraud and have that be the story. You know, when you talk about things like improper payments, though, I mean, reducing improper payments is such a much bigger issue than fraud. And reducing improper payments can have a far more dramatic impact in reducing the fraud. And if you, for example, I think last year the unemployment insurance program spent about $90 billion to help those who lost their jobs. And if you can reduce just 1% the improper payment rate on that, you're saving $900 million. If you spend money going after fraud, I don't think you see that kind of return on investment. But you have to because of the optics of the situation. The other thing you run into is the complexity of these programs. You know, how tough is it going to be to devote the resources and how much is it going to take in resources to actually attack the improper payments where it will have the impact? So I think it makes sense to me that the improper payments approach that Mark is taking or identifying is when relying to folks who actually run the programs, who know, you know, best how to attack fraud, how to attack improper payments. I think there's a lot more to that in terms of data analytics and in terms of, you know, what you really can do to eliminate the optics as well.
That optics question, I guess, is one that's different in the public sector than it is in the private sector, too. I had Dan Levinson, the Inspector General at HHS, here earlier this week, and that conversation's at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. And one of the things that I talked about with him was the idea that some of the cases that he prioritizes are fraud cases where the behavior is particularly egregious. There may be bigger dollar values other places, but the message that's sent through those optics is, in his view at least, more important. I'm paraphrasing his position, but that's the gist of what he presented. And I imagine that's a case that you've seen too in improper payments chasing.
Oh, sure, Sure, absolutely. I mean, you want to set the example, and you want people to know that they can be caught, and that getting away with fraud is not necessarily going to be an easy thing to do. When after Hurricane Katrina, for example, and I was a deputy IG at Homeland Security, our investigators, working with the local police and the FBI, made it a point to identify and arrest as quickly as possible people committing fraud for disaster grants. And those disaster grants could be as low as a few hundred dollars or up to $3,000 or $4,000. So it wasn't the amount, but the idea of having that perp walk on TV at night when all these tens of billions of dollars are going out, I mean, that's the biggest thing in the world to defer future fraud. The people could think, oh my God, they got this guy, they could get me too. So I think he's absolutely right in that you want to do that. So it's not just an economic investment. It's also the optics and basically hoping to reduce future fraud by showing people that you're on the ball and that you're following up and that it does matter no matter what the amount.
Jim Taylor's Managing Director for the Global Public Sector at Grant Thornton. How has data analytics changed the way that people in the financial management community, both on the agency side and the IG side, go after improper payments, Jim?
Well, I think it's provided a great opportunity for the IG and the CFOs in particular to work together. When you have the data, it's a data-rich environment that we're in, assuming that you can absorb that data and turn it into actionable information, you then can work with the inspector generals to target areas to identify. For example, if you have someone in the IRS collecting earned income tax credits and all these refunds are going to the same address, things like that, you can pick those up. Whereas before, it's much, much more difficult to identify. Same thing in unemployment insurance. Are there multiple benefits going to the same location? I mean, those kinds of things are a lot easier to pick up on. I think the Medicare and is identified, physicians, and they publish it. Physicians who collect a lot of Medicare payments for a particular procedure, which kind of looks out of sync with the community that they're in. I mean, though, that kind of information has been invaluable to try to reduce improper payments.
So you have a unique position right now because you get to see into a number of agencies across government, and you get to collaborate with your colleagues at Grant Thornton who are doing the same thing. You mentioned the concept of absorbing data. If an agency can do that, is it your sense that the agencies have the tools they need to be able to absorb that data and really perform the analytics in an effective way, Jim?
I think much more so than they did even a few years ago. So I think that trend line is definitely on the way up in terms of people and agencies getting the kind of information they need to work together and make those decisions. I think that it's an investment. It's not just an investment in getting the data. It's an investment in the tools and the resources and the people, to analyze that information and to be able to see the trends. So I think it's far, the tools are much, much more prevalent than they used to be. However, it's still an investment that agencies need to make, and it's sometimes a tough investment to make.
And another unique position that you've been in throughout your career, Jim, is you've seen this from the CFO office side, and you've seen this from the IG office side. What would you like to see each side do to collaborate better with the other? Not suggesting that they don't work well together now. There are many cases where they're very, very effective in collaboration. But I'm sure, as your auditor friends say, there's always room for improvement.
Right. And my CFO colleagues referred to my days as deputy IG as when I went to the dark side. But I have seen both sides. The biggest thing in my mind is the collaboration and moving away from this compliance mentality. It's instead of treating it as much as an audit, the IG has tools that can really help the CFO and the program managers in reducing fraud and improper payments. They have the investigators on site. They have the tools. They have the training that in many cases the program managers just don't have at their disposal. So if we could move away from this compliance mentality and collaborate much better using these data analytics and using this experience that's out there, I think they can make a lot more progress. And to be honest, I think that there's a lot, in many cases, you're talking legislative changes. I mean, these programs are limited in what they can do legislatively, and it's been a tough time trying to propose and get past measures that would allow them to actually reduce fraud and improper payments even further.